Presentation Podcast, Season 7, Episode 177. Troy, Nolan, and Sandy continue the conversation about features that they feel are needed in PowerPoint. From Sandy's LinkedIn post asking everyone what features they see as missing or needing updates in PowerPoint, makes this a conversation directed by you, the listeners. This is part two of the conversation. Join us as we catch up with our hosts.
I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, Inc., based in Southern California.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in Montclair, New Jersey.
All right, together for part two. What's happening in studios for everybody? What are you guys up to?
Oh, more of the same. Lots and lots of proposals, lots of training proposals going out.
And that's great.
Yeah. Training is sort of is really, I mean, it's ebbs and flows, of course, but a couple of really large sort of multi, people want courses now, or not course. People want like, not just like 1 day or 2 day. They kind of, I've got a lot of people interested in like, can you do a whole bunch of series of trainings?
Lunch and learns.
Yeah. Like over the course of a period.
I've been asked and to I think, do two of those right now.
Yeah. And I think, it's basically the same content. We just sort of spread it out. Mm-hmm. But
so there's smaller segments, smaller times.
Exactly. Okay. So and I'm just finding a lot of, I don't know, people are, I mean, it makes sense. Maybe they think they're people, well, A, they don't want to commit a whole day or half day. Mm-hmm. And also I think they just want it in front of people a lot more than just sort of a one-off. So
to remember it, to take it and use it that day if they need to. A tip. Yeah, exactly.
Make it sort of a regular reminder. So
I got another question on that, Nolan. Only because you know this is going to be a long conversation to begin with, but so I'll just stall it even more, delay it.
Right.
Are you still traveling to? Is everybody in person, or are you doing remote as we go forward?
It's still mostly remote, but I've got, okay. I do occasional in-person ones. I've got one this summer in Pennsylvania. I was recently, where was I? California. So yeah, but it's still mostly
interesting.
Remote,
but, okay. Yeah. That's kind of what I would expect, but I wasn't certain where that was at. Sandy, what are you up to?
Well, let's see. My house is feeling empty as the last of my family is leaving after being here for a month. It's, aww. You know, we had a whole bunch of 12 people at one time and now Lauren just left. Work-wise, I'm rebranding several templates that this is really cool. And I may have mentioned this before, but I've worked with these clients long enough that I'm in their process flow as they start to rebrand, you know, every 5 or 6 years, maybe clients rebrand, some more often. And it's just really great that I can be a part of that and rebrand templates that I originally built. Another cool project is developing a flip book. And what we haven't decided.
Really?
Yes.
We got to talk. We are literally proposing on one right now.
Like a physical flip book?
Well, I think what we haven't decided is if we're going to do it in PowerPoint and mm-hmm. make it interactive, you know, using page turning type of transitions, or a lot of the tools out there, you can send a PowerPoint presentation to an HTML converter mm-hmm. and make some modifications and that'll work. So we just haven't decided yet, but it looks like a really fun interactive project to work on.
Well, Sandy, we'll have to talk if you want. We just literally finished researching all of the options because we're doing we have a proposal out. We assume it's coming in. The client just hasn't said yes, but it's the same thing, but it's their product catalog for their sales team.
Yes, so that's not exactly only, it.
They didn't want it. One of the keys though, is they wanted it to be standalone. In other words, loaded on an iPad or their laptop. Mm-hmm. And that limits a lot of the options because many of them are HTML hosted elements. I've got tons of notes on it and we're doing the whole thing. It took a few steps to get the internal department to agree to, okay, we could do it in PowerPoint. Now we're okay with InDesign, the traditional route, or mm-hmm. PowerPoint. The advantage of the PowerPoint route is that they would have the file to give their sales team and all those assets would be optimized and ready to be copied. It took a few conversations to explain this, but you will have all your logos, all your product shots, all optimized for use in slides or Word documents, and you can copy them from there right into it, as opposed to InDesign, which is this element that we love, but you don't have access to. So we're doing the whole, so that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. I have done the catalog concept in PowerPoint and it's I'm surprised at how long it was used. But this is different. I think it'll be a lot more fun, a lot more design work versus just a product listing catalog, mm-hmm. you know, kind of boring. So I'm excited about that. But how about you, Troy? What's going on?
You know, well, first of all, we just talked flipbooks. The second one is companies that come back. We're in the midst of a template rebrand. Lori's heading up that one. And it's from a company we last worked with in 2016, but they're literally at the point where they said, we've done a rebrand and now we need our PowerPoint template, but we haven't rolled out a rebrand because we know that our PowerPoint template can lend itself to the overall branding rules, like what is good for our sales mm-hmm. teams and stuff. So it's kind of and we did the exact same project all the way back in 2016. So yeah, it's very similar path.
It's weird. Right.
Let's hear other things. Well, we're recording this a few days early when this releases. So if you're listening to this on release day, thank you. I'm in Key West, Florida. My first trip ever down that way.
One of my favorite places in the world.
And Nolan gave many tips on recommendations to Lori. So we're doing just a getaway, just a 4th of July, go see the fireworks over the water. And on the project side, like I was saying, several PowerPoint template projects are in process. The proposals are out there. One of them being that it's literally a sales tool interactive flipbook. So all is moving along.
Can I tell you just a very quick story about a flipbook? My favorite holiday gift that one of my companies sent out when I was in the agency world. One year, we did people always send out, you know, cards and projects and things. They sent we created and sent out a little physical flipbook. And as you flipped through it, there was a little drawing of a dog like juggling and a pony doing some walking a tightrope or something. And you flip through the whole thing. And then at the end, it said dog and pony show. Yeah. And it was, I just love that.
How did you, a print flipbook?
Yeah, it was a real physical,
wonderful.
You know, old school.
That's things. Great. Yeah. I love it.
Okay. No news today. We don't have time because I got to warn you as well. This conversation is a continuation of the previous episode, which was actually a continuation of episode 174. So this is standalone enough to be listened to without any previous episodes, but maybe recommended to, you know, kind of hold here, go listen to episode 174 and then 176 and return here. So today, as a recap of episode 174, which was a couple of episodes ago, it was called Things We Wish Microsoft Would Fix. We had so much feedback on Sandy's LinkedIn post where she asked people, what would you ask? So we categorized those. And then last episode, we kind of did part one. And it was about halfway through. We realized there's no way we're going to get this into one conversation. So now we're on to our second conversation. So we're going to do our best to get through everyone's list in this episode, talking about the PowerPoint wish list.
Okay, Nolan's going to kick us off, but before he does that, I am going to recap what we covered in part one. We covered fonts, we covered text formatting, interactivity, Mac-related requests, video, and animation. So Nolan, kick it off with, what are you going to kick it off
with? All right. Our next topic is Zooming. And we had some entries from Alex Warwick, Muthu Kumar, Sharon Connolly, Siddhant Huda, and Vinath Kumar. Most people just simply wanted the ability to zoom in closer than 400%.
So zoom level, not the interactive zoom.
Yes, correct. Exactly. Although Sharon did request an easy table of contents with a zoom, and I'm not exactly sure what that is, but the zoom feature basically does give you a table of contents in a way, for, you know, based on slides. Zoom feature is something we don't talk about too often. But actually I covered that at one of my creative pro sessions the other day. Maybe we should cover that. It's a great feature that
we actually,
isn't used all that often.
I use it more as a production tool than a design tool. So my conversation may be it'd be great because I'll be out on a tangent where you're going, what? Yeah. So I use its capabilities. Anyways, zooming 400%, not enough. Done.
Yeah, it's the maximum. It's the maximum. And as we know,
so many problems.
Just got to go in further. You need to be able to pan a little more easily while zooming in.
Oh, yes.
And, so yeah, it's just not enough. You gotta, there's a lot more tiny stuff you gotta get to. I don't know what it is in Adobe, but it's certainly
2000.
Is it okay?
Oh, I don't know. You can just zoom in. I mean, it gets down to pixel level.
which is, you know, pretty bizarre for a program that is largely, you know, that is largely vector, right?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, yeah, that's exactly. we've been asking for years. So
I think we agree with everybody on this list where it's just more needed. More, yeah, bigger number.
All right.
Okay.
Troy, you take the next topic. One.
Yeah, let's see here. I've got tables. And first, before I even list these off, I am amazed that there were only a few comments made on PowerPoint tables. So there are three, but actually, you know what? There's four because one of them from Sundar was a comment that we kind of grouped into interactivity, and it was about auto-generated table content. It would fit in here. So Andy, Muhammad, and Sam Webster gave feedback, create our own library of tables. Oh my gosh. Yes. Mm-hmm. Most importantly, a format painter specifically for tables. Totally understand. Like pick up each cell and or row and be able to just customize them. I'm assuming that's where it goes. That's where my mind goes to. And then the third comment was being able to include tables in a set of grouped objects. And I would agree that that is a
huge
horrible
on that.
Exactly.
Downside.
Now, Format Painter from Bright Carbon, I mean, from Bright Slide, right? Table formatting. So that works pretty darn well.
Phenomenal.
Yeah. Yes.
And they also introduced a bunch of other table tools recently where you can easily split tables into rows, columns, cells. And also, do they have a text to table? They also have it's not called reverse. It's change column and
invert the X and Y axis.
Yes, exactly. I'm not using the right words, but yeah. So they have a bunch of table tools, which definitely help it out. But Troy, I think the reason there were only three comments is after you hit your head against the keyboard so many times, you're not able to type your comment. So that's probably why.
Exactly.
There were
only three. No fault that's of our participants at all.
Yeah, we've talked about tables many times.
Okay, we agree. I'm surprised. I think everybody has comments if they use it. But next topic, Sandy.
Okay, well, this is, I honestly didn't know what to call this. So I'll start with the first, the radius on rounded rectangle corners. Ingrid Mengdahl, Karen Room, Mohammed Fahim, Timothy P. Jacquet, Trent Turner, and Andrew Munir all made a comment relating to how they want to be able to control the radius of rounded rectangles. On a slightly different note, but in editing shapes, Andrew Munir wants to add anchor points to shapes. And you guys might know what that means more because I'm not a big Adobe person. And then Ingrid Mengdahl wants to the ability, and I know exactly what she means here, the ability to fill a non-rectangle shape with text so that it follows the edges and fills the whole space, like InDesign and Illustrator.
We kind of talked about that with image wraparound, and that's kind of where it's going. As we should be able to create our own wraps, if you will, and that would be a shape wrap as well right there. So everybody knows you can use, I use the tools too, add in because it has a make same rounded corner. So you select one as a reference, then you can apply it to everything to get them the same. Does Bright Slide, I don't know if they overlap.
Yeah, they do. It's not called that. It's Adjustment Painter.
Exactly.
So the terminology is a little opaque.
And it's buggy.
Have you noticed that too?
Yes, they actually have a pop-up now that says we don't recommend you use it on your slide masters.
Mm-hmm. I've also had occasional issues with it just on
slide
outside of masters. I mean, generally it works. Mm-hmm.
Well, then I'll endorse the tools too, TOO, because it's actually prominent enough. It's on the QAT for all of our computers. Live by it because it's the only thing. And this is just to me baffling because corner radius is. It's a mathematical number. It's not like it's a mystery and it's not exposed, but it should be super, I'm going to rephrase that because I know it's just code, but it seems like a very simple thing to say, select this item and in a field, show me what the mathematical number is. So I could even preset it. It's just a missing element. And the fact that, you know, I use this tool from Tools 2 to make them the same corner radius. So everything, at least on a slide is consistent or throughout a slide deck is consistent, but I'm just taking a visual guess at what number I want to use. It's not like I'm saying I want this to be a 0.125 radius. I'm just saying that looks good and I'll use it.
Yes.
And I mean, it should be pointed out, some brand style guides indicate, like, have a number, mm-hmm. like, you mm-hmm. know, 0.5 yes. rounded corners. That's part of our style guide. And in Adobe, it's, as you said, it's just like height and width. Mm-hmm. It's a number. It's a number. Fair. Like, what do you want the corner radius to be?
I think it's more of an oversight, but there's just nothing there that really
exactly
it baffles me.
Yeah. And to Ingrid's point, I know Ingrid knows this this trick because yes.
She invented it, did she not?
Did she? I don't know. Richard, she might have. Richard Goring was the one that showed me, so Richard may have learned it from Ingrid. But if you take, let's say, a circle, this really works only with circles and, well, kind of rounded corners, depending how much the rounded corner is. If you, so a circle, for example, will not, and I know we've talked about this before, but it won't, the text won't go all the way to the edge. It will stay within like an imaginary rectangle within mm-hmm. inside. But if you take that circle and another shape on top of that circle and union, do the merge shapes union,
yes.
it becomes not a circle technically, but a amorphous shape. And for whatever reason, PowerPoint in that case says, oh yeah, we'll put your text all the way out to yep. the edge. So that works with circles, but it does not work, for example, with a triangle.
Okay.
So like if you had like a right triangle and you wanted the text to like follow the triangle all the way down, and you do the same trick, it doesn't.
Okay, I've never tried that.
It just goes beyond the triangle. It's
a lot of work to do something that should be pretty baked in. Mm-hmm. to be, you yeah. know, the one other one I wanted to comment on was Muhammad Fahim. He made his comment was the ability to make sharp corners rounded for any shape
yes.
as we do in Illustrator.
Like triangles.
Now, I'm assuming that means like if you had a square, I don't want the, you know, I want it to be, well, there is a tool within PowerPoint. It's pretty buried. So if you go to the format shape and obviously the line or the outline, there's a join type. It's one of the parameters and it has three options, rounded, beveled. Well, it's actually round, beveled,
joint type.
Yeah. Joint type. And that's, in other words, yep. a joint.
Yes.
It's join type, but it's where the two meet and you can control your end caps. It also works on lines to give you a rounded end. So a line could just, instead of being a
yes.
flat cutoff, it's a good tool to know about. It's a little painful to access and utilize compared to the Adobe suite and the way it's accessed, but it is another element in there. I use it quite often on you know, shapes, triangles, and whatnot.
But
you can only zoom to 400%, so it's not like you can really see the difference. That's what,
yes.
Okay, here.
Yes, exactly. So that's to that point, we need triangles, for example. That's kind of trendy right now. It's a look where you have rounded corners on mm-hmm. triangles or on any shape for that matter. So I agree
it's
100%.
It's not a rounded corner radius. It's just the join type. So it's a very minimal.
It's the outline.
Thing.
It's the stroke.
Yeah. Yes.
And it can make exactly. some nice effects.
Okay.
It actually really comes into play when you're using PowerPoint's 3D, you know, make an element 3D shaped. It really can impact the overall visual. Okay. What's another one here? Cause I think we had like 12 or 13 of these to go through today, right?
Yeah.
Pictures. Ezekiel Arul Elango, more picture format options like Adobe Photoshop to make, you know, PowerPoint itself rather, you know, than using external software. So, yeah, I mean, just basically you're asking for more editing features and yeah, of course we would love more, you know, PowerPoint is never going to be Photoshop. But we certainly could do with things like more, I don't know what, you know, like curves and levels would be really nice. Mm-hmm. Certainly a workable remove background tool.
Blend modes,
like
all that.
Blend
stuff,
modes, yeah. Yeah, all those things like that. Jamie, trace tool for converting PNG to SVG. So again, that would be really nice. Like an Illustrator has a, what's the Illustrator tool? Is it Trace? It might just be called Trace, where you can take.
Know.
Yeah, the one that'll yeah. take bitmap stuff. So yeah. I'm going to call this out because I don't know if anybody follows Jamie on social media, and I am definitely not the social media person, but he just did a proof of concept one showing in PowerPoint using an AI engine to convert an element, a bitmap yes. to raster, an SVG, mm-hmm. which could be ungrouped. I thought it was pretty amazing.
So what, I'm sorry, how did he do it?
He has a proof of concept. This is not okay. something out there, but he's like, I'm going to use AI engines. And he basically mm-hmm. says, it's basically take this raster and convert it to SVG. Mm-hmm. No, it was a great way of like, hey, I'm not going to code a tool. I'm going to use, mm-hmm. You know, in that vein, I was just at the studio yesterday, and one of our devs there, I said, hey, I want to use this. Windows 11 supports Android apps. And what I was really going for is I don't have an Android phone. I just want to be able to proof our web apps on Android. Couldn't we do this? And he's like, well, you can, but it doesn't have a web browser. So he's like, oh, I have my AI engine. We're using ChatGPT. The pro business level, whatever it is. He's like, yeah, I'm recompiling a new version. I just told it what I wanted to do and it's doing all the coding for me. And sure enough, in about, 10, 15 minutes, I had a running module of Android on my Windows computer so I could look at our apps as a mobile browser. And it was all done because, again, the coding was done by AI. Jamie did a thing. So now I've totally distracted us. But Jamie, very awesome stuff. And it's possible that that request will come to fruition by his own self. Self-fulfilling prophecy there. Jamie says it, Jamie creates it.
Well, in addition to that feature being an Illustrator, there's a site called vectorizer.io, which will do the similar thing as well. And I think it's I'm sure there's a few out there, but I'm sure that's a freemium site that you could use for that. Janine Stonehill would like to create a placeholder image from a custom shape.
Oh, my God, that'd be awesome.
That would be nice in sort of a one-click thing, but you can do that by using the merge shape tools. So all, if I'm understanding correctly, all placeholder images start out as rectangles.
That's right.
But you can either change the shape, but if you want a custom one, you can use the merge shape tools to intersect or subtract or whatever to get a custom shape. So that's a...
Yeah, you can change it with the change shape tool to a triangle if you want it. With the merge shape, you can make something... A swoosh.
Right. And you can edit the points just like any other vector
exactly.
shape. But maybe a more one-click way would be nice as well. Mohammed Fahim would love to be able to adjust the image resolution while exporting slides as images. Now, I think that's only possible with add-ins these days, right?
Well, you can go to the registry. I'm sorry, I don't know what it is, and export change a number there. But I use Brightcarbon, Brightslide for that.
So yes, you can, but not directly there because resolution is based on the page size. So I'd seen somebody at one point had a really cool Excel calculator. Basically, it said, I need this resolution to tell you what your page size should be in PowerPoint. So your export image would be that resolution or that pixel count. Mm-hmm. It was a very cool thing. I just use the Brightslide export images because it does it so much faster.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And Sharon Connolly would like to be able to add shapes over pictures in the master. And yes, we would all like that. In the master, just to clarify, any placeholder, be it a picture placeholder or text placeholder or content placeholder, that will respect Z order layering. So however you layer it, you can layer like a text box over an image placeholder. It'll be respected once you finally get to the slide. But any other stuff, just like a shape or a logo or whatever, will not. And all those placeholders will jump on top of that. Unless there are some tricks out there to, cut out the picture image or to place a shape or logo inside a placeholder as a background image. So those are some tricks we use. But yeah, just being able to have better control over Z order and layers, especially when it comes to masters, would be awesome.
Let's see here. We can go to print.
Okay. Do you want to do that one? Or?
Yeah, well, I came to PowerPoint through kind of...
This is where Microsoft turns off the podcast. sorry.
Hey, it was a big attention point in 2008, maybe. So I came to PowerPoint through animation and interactivity implementation. I mean, that was kind of my path into using PowerPoint or being asked to do PowerPoint projects. But prior to that, I was a print production designer. So I... have always cringed at PowerPoint's print capabilities and setup, kind of along the lines with how I cringe about its text formatting or just ability to just the hoops you got to go through to do things. So, and I think a few others agree. I have comments from Allison, M, Andrew, Munir, Matthew, Dyer. And they are, here's one. See what you guys say about this. Update the printing options and note pages when printing. Anybody would like an update on those?
Those are little faded.
This one's actually very interesting. When I try to set the page size to A4, the slide dimensions are not set to the right proportions.
In fact, when you're told the dimensions in the parentheses, and they're not actually the dimensions.
Set it to a letter, they're not the right dimensions.
And when you, US letter, it's the right proportion, but it's the wrong sizing. I'm like, I understand aspect ratio very, very well, but why don't you just make it 8.5 by 11? Because that's literally what the world knows. And A4 is the same thing. It's literally a metric measurement. Now, I understand the problem here. If you're on a US keyboard, you're going to see inches or, US measurements versus the rest of the world metric. But these things seem incredibly oversight. Okay. And the third one is, because I can't dwell on that, make it easier for people to make more attractive handouts. Literally the same comment as Allison.
My dream.
We jumped through so many hoops to do this. Printing is just.
That's a place where I think AI can really step in. Can you imagine taking a deck and saying, create handout?
Based on the notes that you've entered?
Based on the notes, on what's on the screen.
Right.
Even at the very, and have some options at the very least, just make your notes pages sort of designed.
Exactly. Did you guys use Publisher at all?
Nope.
Oh, I loved it. I just loved playing with that software. I came from print also. I was in the ad agency world, and that was a natural thing for me to use.
I used PageMaker. I did not
need... I did use PageMaker too at some point.
Then obviously Quark. Was still one of my favorite all-time programs. But Publisher was always kind of the one I didn't focus on. I'll just leave
okay.
That.
It was
But it had so many print and layout capabilities that if we could import them into PowerPoint would
be... Could swear there's a connecting text boxes section in here, and that should go in the print.
We talked about that up above last episode. We talked about that was during the text area.
Okay,
where I don't know where
master
we're
slides.
At.
Nolan?
Master slides. Okay, we got a bunch of things on master slides. Not surprisingly, Janine Stonehill to not automatically add slide masters to a template when bringing in slides from other presentations. Now, again, with a number of these, there are some sort of The users do have some control over this. Mm-hmm. When you bring in slides from somewhere else, you have the choice to keep source formatting, which will bring over the master if it's a different master, or the default is that it does take on what's there. Now, PowerPoint did I don't know when they sort of implemented this, but in the last couple of years, when you bring over something else and you say, if you say keep source formatting and it's the same template, in general, it will not create duplicate masters for you.
I disagree.
You disagree?
I think that is the intention.
Did it get worse?
I think it activates after like 15 instances or something ridiculously high, but I don't think it actually works like
it was intended.
There's a better way of saying that.
So clearly there's still issues with
this. It was beautiful. It was, you could, if your presentation was made from the template, you could copy it over and it was a perfect. And
I mean, it does. Yeah. You get Frankenstein slides, but you get, I got a funny story. So I work in the same office space as Lori. So Lori's having a call with a client and we're talking through basically presentation makeover, what we can do, this and that. And it was just such a subtle note to say, your team doesn't know the problems they create because you don't notice it. But so she basically said, as we're reviewing one of their decks, she's like, okay, so as example, in this deck, one of the things we do is we consolidate all your masters. Because if we click here, so I'm listening to this in the background, you can see you have over 15 master slides in use, but you only have one template. You have 15 instances of the same template in use. We obviously will consolidate that and make it more streamlined, this and that. And it's just, the master Frankenstein multiplying effect is out of control.
Okay. So Martin Fazal had a similar question, being able to copy slides in from a different deck, and these slides adopt the same template as the deck they pasted into. So again, wherever you paste a slide into, so let's say you actually have multiple masters going on intentionally in a deck, and you paste right after a slide, wherever you paste it into, it will take on the master of that previous slide.
Yes.
So I've got, you know, some decks, some training decks with multiple masters intentionally. And when I'm copying slides in, very often I just have to find the right slide and the right master to paste it into, and then I can move it after that, just so it takes on the one I want to. But it's not, you know, it's not intuitive. It's not easy. Also,
should that be like a great option? Like when you paste it in, your choices are,
yep, you can choose
keep existing or choose one. And that would also make people aware of like, oh, I've got a lot in here.
Masters,
oh, yeah. It's like a,
yes.
Yeah. So you can do it, but like Nolan said, you just got to think it through and put a slide in there. How many times, Nolan, have you just added a slide from the right master so you could paste after and then you delete that slide? Like these are steps that are just now, steps.
Right. Now, again, you can paste it in and, oh, well, I'll just select these slides and apply the master, but then you're applying an actual layout, not necessarily, and everything gets messed up. Because when you if you bring something over and you let it take on the master, if the layout doesn't have a one-to-one matchup, which, you know, it almost never does, it will create a new layout. And that's actually a smart thing because you don't, I mean, you may not want that layout, but you also don't want all your placeholders, you know, going all wacky, you know.
Yeah, it should ask you, do you want us to create one or would you like to pick one of these that will match it as close as we can so you can sort of manage it?
And of course, and I know we have to keep moving, but there is the,
it's the whole
issue,
this whole conversation,
of not using placeholders on your slides and creating text boxes. And if that's the case, you may be lucky if you have a single slide master there of getting the background and everything, but your fonts aren't going to change because they're hard coded in a text box. Your colors might not change. It's not going to pop into the title location. It's not going to plug into the chart location. It's a mess. Okay.
Matthew Dyer, better master slide options and layouts built in. Yes. Tony Ramos, within the slide master, a single button which removes all unused layouts. Yep. Tools 2, I believe, does that.
Yep.
And does Bright Slide. Slidewise. I think Slidewise might.
Oh, is it Slidewise? Okay.
Slidewise will show it. Yeah, it has the option to delete it. Yeah. I do like the one in Tools 2. It's a succinct. Do you want to delete unused masters? Do you want to delete unused masters and content layouts? Those are two button options. We use them when cleaning up decks all the time.
Cheryl, always a serious update to building templates. Yes. Janine, again, the ability to customize the tints in a palette from the defaults and more colors is an option. Yeah. Those tints are still a problem. Of course, you use.
Although they're a great element until they don't match a company that has a preset style guide.
They're not calculated correctly.
But
you can use Bright Slide to create custom colors, and I do that all the time to create true palette tints and shades down at the bottom. Helen Fuchs, layouts for Facebook, LinkedIn, and social media. That's I mean, a lot of us have made those, but they're also always changing.
Right.
That would certainly be a nice little plugin or something that Microsoft could give us. Carrie Marklin, being able to put logos and other elements over image placeholders. We talked about that. Joe Popovich, get rid of bullet points on their templates. You're going to lose that battle. as the default to have a bullet point. You can, of course, do it manually, but yeah. Diana Lloyd, format continuity checker, something that looks at slide formatting and catches slides that don't align with common elements in your deck, like mismatched footers and headings. Yeah, that would be awesome, the kind of thing that AI can definitely step in and help with.
Wilson has worked on add-ins for me to help.
Yeah, there
with
are
that.
Some. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. There are some add-ins, some commercially available, mainly enterprise, that do similar to that. My favorite one is if you have a slide, let's just say red is in your template, but then you manually set the red, it's no longer template-based, so you can't guarantee it. So I've seen a checker that goes through all the decks and says, here's all the instances of this red that are based on the theme, and here's all the ones that are just maybe accurate. Well, it looks like anyways. Yeah, it seems like a huge
A couple years ago, InDesign instituted find and replace color, which is so cool. And you can find and replace swatches, and like when you it's really cool.
Same thing in Illustrator. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll move on to charts. And like tables, surprised that we didn't have more feedback on that. But Balaji N wants enhanced data visualization tools, as we all do. And George Alexandrov wants to be able to replace fonts in charts.
Replace fonts doesn't work on charts.
Nope. Yeah. Nope.
You can manually do it. But yeah.
You have to go into the chart and change them. But if you globally try to replace the fonts, it's only going to do it. I can't remember if it does tables, but it certainly doesn't do charts.
It does tables, but PowerPoint tables, not Excel tables.
Right.
Mike, if you're Powell, if you're listening, have we talked about that instead of adding that to SlideWise? Replacing the chart fonts. I know it's difficult, but it's just code. So I'll throw that out there.
It's just code. Oh, here's something I added. You know, I would love to see us be able to trace charts from pictures to populate data.
Mm-hmm.
There used to be an add-in for PowerPoint 2010. It was awesome. You traced them, and based on what you traced, you got the data.
Yeah, created.
So you ended up with an Excel spreadsheet supporting it. Whatever
I used to, we talk about this all the time. We used to use a software that no longer works to do that. And it was kind of funny because we both used it. She probably used it more than me. Uh-huh. And it was like, oh yeah, I've used that because we used to recreate this data all the time. It was nice to create a fake data set quickly and more accurately than, you know, current ways. Yeah, it seems like that should be something in there. Even a third party tool to do that seems like a viable option. Charts, only two comments. I think it's Nolan headbanging, just couldn't type on the keyboard. Nobody's, or we're all that
similarly polite. Tiers can short out a keyboard, so that's probably also why.
Okay. Oh my goodness, let's move
Troy,
on
to- what do you, yeah what do you've got
no I'm gonna let Sandy
I'm gonna move
go.
On to color oh, yeah Sandy, I'm just, these on. Are so short well this is color regarding color. Andy Bundock wants secondary color palette creation without having to use BrightSlide, XML hack or the XML hack. Janine Stonhill wants the ability to customize the tints in a palette, so we address that in this template issue. Mohammed Fahim wants the ability to change and replace colors. Oh. Currently, we can only do this with theme colors, but there should be an option to do it for any color. Remember, we used to do something.
Too.
Yeah, yeah. And Sharon Conley wants to wants to search and replace colors.
I'm surprised those are all amazing. I think I would have come up with different options. So this is awesome to see this, but yes. Huh.
Is there an add-in or something that does this? Did someone suggest
so? Sharon suggested this add-in called from MLC. What's it called? The MLC PowerPoint add-in. I'm not sure I've actually ever seen that, but it sounds like maybe there is a replace colors tool on it. I honestly have never used this or seen it. Looks interesting. Looks like a suite of tools.
I think I would have grouped a lot of gradient asks into color because gradients are based on color. That's more of a designy element, but I would have gone to a lot of gradient needs.
I'm also learning from this. We have a lot of listeners across the pond.
Yes.
Colours.
Isn't that great?
Colours.
Colours.
Sorry.
You want to know, while we're on the topic of colors, this is completely opposite. Did you know that in Adobe Photoshop, duotone is no longer an option? It's all based on gradients now, which gives you way more control over creating like a duo. This because duotone is a color thing. I just literally discovered this. Well, actually, Lori discovered it. And I was like, no. And then we went over and started investigating. I'm like, oh, duotone is gone. It's now a gradient process, which is great. It's actually creates more flexibility. But the quick duotone feature has been replaced with a more robust one. So actually PowerPoint is the easier thing to create duotones with now. Side note, just something learned this week. Speaking of Adobe, see, this was all a planned transition. Can't you tell? There was a whole topic group that Sandy grouped for us that said, be more like Adobe. So, and I'm going to read through these because these are really good. I mean, this is where companies can look at what the other companies are doing and see if those are valid or valuable feature sets. Obviously, Adobe being a very visual design product suite should be something that PowerPoint looks to. And conversely, I think there's a lot of things in PowerPoint now that things like Adobe should look at. But let's read through a couple. Yes.
Well, I just think what's really cool is I'm seeing more traditional designers really wanting to get that are interested in PowerPoint.
Yeah, it's an underutilized from a design standpoint program.
I thought it was really great.
So, I'm going to say Vishal Kumar said, and this is about the interface, ability to move the workspace while working with graphics, like we had the flexibility of artboards in InDesign. In design applications like Illustrator and InDesign. Do you guys know what the ribbon is the ribbon. It doesn't move. The right pane, you can tear off a few of the right panes, but what's really
in artboards, what would that, would that be?
I mean, every slide's kind of an artboard.
It is.
Kind of, but the idea is you can groove move. So what's really funny about it, when I read this, I went back to PowerPoint 2000, where we used to have every single tool bar was its own little bar, and you could put it anywhere on your slide.
Modal,
it could be free floating, or you could lock it here. And that was one of my hardest, it still is one of my hardest things about the ribbon interface. Say you're formatting all the footnotes on a, 200 slides, and you got to basically go up, click the format, click it, go all the way to the bottom because it's the bottom slide element. I can zoom in and page down, but it does create a lot of extra mouse movement, able to do it.
The
ability
to
easily create your own layout of ribbon layout. Now you can do it. It's very complex. A lot of add-ins do their own version, but it's not a really intuitive thing. So it's almost like what I'm hearing is, hey, I kind of like what we used to do in PowerPoint 2000. Could I have some of those features back? And I made those exact same comments. We transitioned. I think I just gave up and, the QAT is my favorite, but it's still at the top. Ingrid Mendel. Did I say that right? Mangdahl? Mangdahl. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. Sorry, Ingrid. I really knew it. Layer blending options for pictures and shapes, because that's what they do in every Adobe program. Would love to be able to set the color shape on top of a picture and set it to multiply or overlay. Hey, creating duotones with an overlay effect or a multiply effect. Yeah, those are all elements that are so missing. And I really think that those should have been integrated when PowerPoint had this big push to do. I mean, all of our formatting, cool picture formatting tools were put in one time period, and it's kind of like it got locked in time there. We don't get anything new added to those. And these would be great things. Yes. Just to create, I mean, you could do so many things you could do. Okay. Sergio Peyoto, hopefully.
Ooh,
similar thing here. Blend options like multiply screen and overlay. I said it earlier. Now two people have said it. Musa Kumar said, this one's really cool. Spacebar control to move around slides like Figma and Adobe. Do you guys know what that?
I don't.
Is that spacebar click?
When you're in like Photoshop. So I'm going to use you create a marquee. You have a circle and you want to nudge it over.
Oh,
if you hold the spacebar down, it lets you move the marquee.
Yep.
And when with arrows.
No. Well, arrows or your mouse, but it allows it to be movable. It becomes a movable element.
Yes.
And I'm assuming this the same thing would be so many times easy, but we don't really do marquees the same way. So I'm not sure I totally see where this is going, but again, leveraging more keyboard options to allow more energy to be. Of course, just zooming in more than 400% would allow you to move things closer and better.
Are there any options to tab around objects on a slide?
Yeah.
The tab key
just goes down the selection pane. So it's in that order.
So you have to select one thing and then tab. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that works. Does that work on the Mac?
That's how I use it on in charts all the time to go through.
It does.
Or buried elements. But it's very, I mean, it's faster just to open the selection pane and go click instead of go down, 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 right. down. Where am I at here? Thank you. Sayan. I can't even.
Banerjee.
That's exactly Banerjee. What I was going to say.
Banerjee.
Flexibility in terms of tools, artboard panels. So anybody that uses other programs is familiar with this idea of creating your own custom workspace. What would be the step beyond this is the save your workspace. I want a minimal workspace. And there's, you know, PowerPoint now has on the ribbon that when you right click, what is it? When you full screen only, tabs only, which I use quite often and show, mm-hmm. always show ribbon, high quick access toolbar. Why would anybody want to do that? But it's an option. So anybody that's worked in these other programs, they can see some of the deficiencies or the lack of options in Microsoft products. There are options there. They're just not as robust. Andy Boondock says proper editable image masking with shapes so you can control and undo. 100% agree. The crop tool is basically a mask now, but it's so limited in, no, it's not limited. It's so difficult to control what you're cropping. And moving elements within it. Mm-hmm. Some of that's that zoom level and always taking it back to the center of the image. Chris Jones also says masking. And then Michelle Engstrom says masks and layer modes. So covers it all without me having to get crafty with layers, holes, and background fill. See, somebody mentioned background fill, one of my favorite hidden mm-hmm. features that's been there forever. And so these can be done. They're all hacks.
Okay, so I'll take on drawing. Let's see, Karen Room, which she was so gracious to tell me how to pronounce her name on LinkedIn, which is really great. Make it easier to tweak smart art. Why do we have to convert it to shapes first? Exactly.
I'm just going to agree. There's nothing more immediate. Yeah.
Exactly. Sarah Moore wants better smart art usability. Sergio Piotto, is that how you pronounced it, Troy?
Sergio Piotto? I don't know. It's a wonderful name.
It's wonderful. And I
love his comment, though. Just go with the comment.
Yes, better Bezier tools to create vector shapes. Awesome. Trent Turner wants better gradient accuracy. A marker at zero incorrectly calculates the gradient. I think they changed that with 2011. There was something really weird that happened. Setting the marker to 1% drastically improves and corrects accuracy with respect to all other applications.
Wait, I haven't done that. Hold on. Let me think. Marker at zero incorrectly calculates gradient. I agree. But moving it up, I'm going to have to play with that.
That's, with that a little bit. Great suggestion. Yep.
I would love an example file of what you're talking about. Because my thing is, if you want just a transparent gradient and say you have a white box, you set it to 100% on the left, you want to gradient away to zero on the right, it should not matter what that right color is. But yet, if your right color is green, you actually get a tinge of green.
Yes.
See, to me, you're getting 1% of green still. Right. So you have to set it to be white and then tell it to disappear. So that's what I was thinking of as inaccurate. But you're saying making it 1%. Okay, I'm going to play with that.
Well, let's take a look at it. Zayed Siddiqui, overlay and curve handles.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Popovich wants the default color for a shape outline should be none. I mean, we can set that, but I think he's saying when PowerPoint opens, the default should not be have a line, right, a rule around it.
I think there is some reasoning behind that. And these days it might have to do with accessibility.
Let's see. Jamie Groke wants improved path editor, for example, constrain moving a point that mm-hmm. handle along X or Y axis mm-hmm. with modifier keys.
Yes, that would be mm-hmm. so helpful.
Mohamed Bonir wants the possibility to have a pen tool feature like in PowerPoint. Not quite sure.
You mean probably like Illustrator?
Maybe that's what was meant.
Yeah.
So yep.
Pen tool.
But don't we have a pen tool feature?
Well,
it depends how we're defining pen. This isn't like inking pen. This is pen to create custom shapes.
Of course.
And set. Is that what you're thinking, Nolan?
Well, the Illustrator pen tools are just more powerful. I mean, you can edit points. You can add subtract. You can draw freehand, and that's like a vector pen in Illustrator.
Often say PowerPoint is like Illustrator 2.0. The features are there. They're just not refined.
Right.
And this would be a prime example.
Mutumkuma D, Mutha Kumar D, agrees, wants a pen tool. Vinath Kumar wants more auto shapes for creative options. Yes, we agree with that. And Chetna
Shapes palette Divyanath, is a little dated, I would say. It hasn't changed since maybe PowerPoint 2098.
Yeah, I think you're right. Keyboard shortcuts for alignment and distribution of objects. A Windows thing. I have to check that out.
No, you don't. You don't have them on the Mac OS. You can set. You can set Mac OS, not iOS, Mac OS shortcuts for PowerPoint, and that's what I've done. Not on Windows, although Troy, you can do your what do you call it? The quick keys. QAT trick for
I actually do it two ways. They're on my QAT, and then I have my Stream Deck also has those buttons, but it's mapped to. So the problem is I can't change my QAT because I've literally mapped to the position, because you do the Alt key and then it, you know, you can calculate what tool is where. So, you know, if I click the Alt key, I can see that my alignment tools are is that 0K? Yeah, 0K and 0L, 0M, and 0N. So I can actually have my Stream Deck activate those, but it's all based on location. So if I reorder my QAT or it blows up, I would lose all those commands. Okay. Seems like those should be built in. Hacks to get around it.
All right.
That was driving. I mean, drawing. Excuse me.
Let's drive on to the next one, Sandy or Nolan.
Okay. Nolan.
The next category has been broadly defined as interface wishes. We've got a lot of these. Menon Mickers Minning, a tool to align objects so they exactly touch. Same thing with the add-ins. There is an add-in that will do that. I believe BrightSlide has a way of doing that.
Tools 2 has one as well.
Yeah. And I mean, by the auto, auto align, you know, will kind of do that. But
I think it's better. The whispers, you can kind of see it, but I know what she's getting at.
Yeah. Tools 2 have ones called a join, and that's the one I'm used to. I know there's one in BrightSlide. Maybe it's just because I didn't learn it, but it's pretty cool. You know, it instantly could stack things to pixel edging. So it is there. It's just not built into PowerPoint.
And there's a trick I've used on every once in a while if I'm creating grids or whatever. You can right align to rectangles and then on one of them drag it out to the right. So you're reversing it, but the sort of the axis that it, you know, it's the axis is kind of the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Faisal Mehboob, I'd like to have a sidebar in PowerPoint that allows us to access Google, emails, and any other important internet sites directly from within PowerPoint. That is very interesting. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I've ever heard of that before.
I'm assuming this means in edit view as opposed to when presenting.
That's what I thought. But
I actually was thinking during presenting to bring those things up without leaving the slideshow. But yeah, I bet it's...
There's an add-in, an office add-in for a lot. I think it's for bringing in a live website, but that should have been built into PowerPoint for years. That's interesting. I mean, you know, like the add-in for the Noun project is indispensable, and that's where you're essentially accessing the web. Okay. Phil Evans, the increments that you can move guides. Yeah, I mean, right now, I think it's all just moving it with your mouse, right? Unless you
you can't
make use of keyboard, slide. No nudging.
Use bright slide, and you can't undo accidentally moving.
You cannot undo. That would be a huge one.
Oh, that drives me nuts.
You know what? You can't also get the guide to be exactly where you want because we're stuck to 400% zoom level.
Yes.
Vinath Kumar editing the slide in slideshow mode. Yeah, that's been a request by we have a fellow MVP, I believe, who asks for that every opportunity.
See now, I push back on that one because again, you have to use multiple displays. But I edit things live all the time, especially when I'm proofing a thing, a presentation. I open it up without presenter view active. And then I'm running the slides and I can do my edits on my primary monitor and I can see the edits go live. So you can edit in slideshow. You just can't edit on the slideshow screen. So it is possible. Now on a Mac, you get a little more limited because you can't take presenter view and make it go smaller. You can't bring up your edit view on top of it, but on the Windows side, it is possible.
So Troy, you're opening two instances of the same file.
Nope. I'm hitting presentation. When you run a slideshow, it just brings up the slideshow over top of whatever you are showing. So if you just basically, the easiest way for me is don't turn on presenter view, and my slideshow opens up on my secondary monitor. I have the edit view on my left monitor. If I nudge something, it nudges over on slideshow view. So it's totally functional, but it's how you're looking at it. I'm still in the edit view on one monitor, the slideshow on the other. I can change things, but I can't do it on the slideshow screen. And I could see that being
when you do that, can you go back and forth with presenter view on that main screen?
Well, because I'm on Windows and it allows me to resize them, yes, I often run presenter view on the right half of my monitor and on the edit monitor and the edit view on the left half. So I have three windows of PowerPoint. Edit view and presenter view are sharing a screen, and slideshow is on the other screen so I can see it larger. Do it often.
Yeah. I
can't do that on a Mac.
I think it would be nice within. So, I mean, what you're doing is... I mean, a little complicated for the average user, possibly. I mean, it would certainly be nice in presenter view if you could just edit that slide. But anyway, okay, what do we got next?
Mohammed,
ability to lock guides. If we accidentally move them and don't remember their exact position, that's right. As Sandy said, there's no undo. We've all done that. Oh, Control Z. Oh, I just changed something on slide 52.
Yes, exactly.
Emily, pro and standard version, with the pro version having advanced features. Interesting. Do you want, I got to talk to Emily about this. You want two different versions of PowerPoint?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's what she's saying. You know, like BrightSlide could have a plugin that's for, to me, basically we have it already with the desktop and the web version.
Oh, that's a great way to look at it.
That's where my head goes.
Yeah, interesting.
There was talk in years past with having multiple versions of PowerPoint, and it made a lot of sense for, you know, basically light use and heavy, and also based on computer type, you know, especially if you go back, you know, 8+ years, computers were not as robust. You know, a Chromebook can do so much more than what used to be a moderate computer from, you know, a decade ago. So there was talk of that.
I always thought vertical markets, like for legal use, you know, calling up documentation and blowing out
now,
testimony.
My only problem with that is if you've got multiple levels, people are going to have the lower level and they're going to be missing features.
Doesn't this work? Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to give what I think would be a better solution to this, because we're not going to get Microsoft to change their SKUs. It's a single SKU. It's Microsoft PowerPoint. You know, it's just what it is. Mm-hmm. But if you go to the Tools 2 add-in, something that the developer added a couple of years ago now is there's an option that says, says beginner, intermediate, or expert. So it's for this toolbar. All it does is changes what features are visible to you. Oh. I think that would be a great implementation. When you start a PowerPoint, now obviously everybody thinks they're an expert until they go to their first training program and we go, ooh, there's a lot of stuff in here I wasn't aware of. But it's a really cool idea to basically customize the ribbon based on the user. Selection. So maybe the pro version is all the features are there, but they're not exposed unless you ask for them to be. I think Tools 2 did a really cool thing. It only affects that one custom toolbar, but it seems like an idea worth exploring. Now, I think, didn't somebody else go on, Sandy?
No, I was going to say John Waters thinks the same thing. He would like a pro and standard version. He agreed 100% with Emily.
Yep.
Janine Stonehill, the ability to lock and unlock elements. So in the selection pane, you can kind of technically lock an element, but you can then select it and delete it. So,
and you can't do it on the master.
Right. Sharon, color shape palettes that stay popped out like they used to years ago. Timothy, command or control shift and shift plus V to paste without formatting. That's not possible, because that's possible in almost every other program.
It's right? For text it is, but I don't think it is for anything else.
There is a keyboard command to say remove all PowerPoint formatting. What is it? So like if you have a bevel and nobody uses bevels anymore, there's a way to remove it easily. And I am not thinking of it. I will come up with it hopefully by the end of our talk. So there is kind of a keyboard way, but it's not with the paste. It's a separate command. So I just got to figure out what it is.
Kelly Schrank, better spell check and track changes. Matthew Dyer, get rid of any ribbon real estate being taken up by outdated features like word art. Yeah, some of the lesser known functions and get rid of the useless ones. Yeah, that would be nice. You cannot customize the built-in template, the built-in tabs, but you can, of course, make your own. Mm-hmm. Can you hide default tabs?
Yeah, you can if you go into the edit.
Backend. The edit. Right-click on the ribbon.
Okay, yeah, so you can't hide. So yeah, that would certainly be good. Like under our design tab, right? All those, all those themes. Manon, a tool to align objects so they exactly touch, right? I think we talked about that before. Janine, cross-platform transitions. Last time I checked, Morph doesn't work cross-platform.
Like Google?
That type of cross-platform.
Well, we're not going to get Google to pick up Morph, but definitely through Mac and PC, Morph works. Siddhant Huda, unlimited undos without having the need to customize it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Chetna, keyboard shortcuts for alignment and distribution of objects, again, on the PC. That would be very, very welcome. All right. So that is random interface things. I think, Troy, you've got
take over 3D.
I will do that. But first, in the PowerPoint options and on the advanced tab, it says maximum number of undos. I believe the default is 15 or 20.
That sounds about right.
You can modify that. On my computer, it's 45. Now, I also know I have more memory available because this is a very memory-intensive thing. It can also slow down the process. But as example of that one, you do have control. The default is set to accommodate all computers. I think this is also an element that could be looked at. Like, we see your computer has 4 megabytes of RAM. You should probably stick with 5. I see your computer has 64 gigs of RAM. Would you like to increase this default? And, you know, it seems like it should do a little audit of your system specs. But yeah, you can. I don't know about unlimited. That would be a lot of memory.
Well, yes, Siddhant didn't want to have to customize it at all. He just thinks it should be the default.
Yeah,
and I don't know, that's my interpretation.
But just let everybody know it is an option. You can kind of set. Okay, well, this one's really easy. The 3D was in there. First of all, I'm surprised 3D even came up. 3D was one of the biggest things I was so excited about, and it just never became an implemented common workflow. I don't talk much about it, but there is a couple of comments. Oliver House said, integrate 3D Builder so you can edit 3D objects similar to how you can edit 2D shapes. There's no 3D editor built into Office. There's also no interoperability to say edit this shape, you know, right click on it and say open up in PowerPoint's. It's just Paint that is a 3D builder now, right? Tells you how long it's been since I've really explored this. Microsoft has a really good 3D capabilities in their basic program that they probably should have renamed. Anyways, and then Muhammad Fahim also said the ability to change colors of 3D models given in the PowerPoint library. I'm assuming that means within the PowerPoint theme and that they should automatically pick up the theme colors, which is kind of a cool idea because you can do it with SVGs. You can break apart an SVG, set all of its elements to theme colors, and therefore the colors of that SVG vector graphic will follow a template color scheme when it moves around, but you cannot do anything like that. A 3D model is literally an inserted object with all external controls, all external styling, and it's very limited usability functionality within PowerPoint. And I truly wish it would have taken off more. It's still there. It's not going away. We'll see what happens in the future, but yeah, I'm surprised there is even a couple of comments for that.
All right. Now, next topic. These folks are all looking for some sort of assets library. Vinath, Helen, Deb A., Catherine Burns, and Trent Turner. Yeah, I mean, we have creative cloud libraries, but nothing built into PowerPoint. And there are also, again, some other add-ins like not Pixabay, is it
Picket?
Picket.
Picket has a great one.
It does actually. Picket is very powerful. You can create a whole, you know, just for yourself or, you know, for a whole enterprise situation, but certainly nothing built in. I would even appreciate just a multiple cut and paste type thing, where you can like pick up object, copy five bits, individual bits of text, and have them in a panel to be able to sort of paste them in, you know, later on, you know, at your leisure. All right. So that's on libraries.
Okay. And I will finish it up with an macros, a Sundar, who has contributed other ideas. And I'm just going to read this directly. And you guys can help me understand it. Inbuilt macros. And then in parentheses, same size, same height, same width for objects, pick up and drop position / properties while converting and vice versa.
I'm not sure. Maybe he's asking for easier macro writing creation.
Yeah, because all of those elements are already created for you and they're almost all free. Just go get a couple of third-party add-ins and you're going to get all those features as opposed to learning how to do it yourself. But Nolan, I know you do a lot of macros because a Mac kind of supports it, if you will, mm-hmm. with your keyboard shortcuts and stuff. I'm going to call that a macro.
Yes.
Yeah, how you want to call it. But yeah, I think that there's not a whole lot of control there. And a lot of it revolves around security and what malicious things people could put into PowerPoint slides. We lost a lot of functionality over the years due to that. Mm-hmm. That's all I got to say on that one.
Okay. And we'll leave it there.
Okay, as a wrap-up, quick poll just among the three of us. What PowerPoint features can you think of that were not covered?
Preview animation.
Ooh.
The right way.
Okay.
Right now, you currently have to wait the 60 seconds for the animations mm-hmm. that precede an animation to run their course. And then you can preview said animation.
Did we talk about video? Yeah, video was in there. It was in last episode.
Video was last episode.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to think. What about, so here's the presenter view. Did we talk about presenter view feature set?
I don't think so. We mentioned
it. Go ahead. But yeah.
I don't want to talk. I'm just kind of saying, hey, no matter what we cover, there's always going to be more. Presenter view was one that came to mind. I couldn't check through the notes fast enough to see if we covered it. Hey, it's basically, it's equally great, maybe reassuring, that virtually every ask on your list that you collected, Sandy, is on our lists of asks.
That's right.
See, everybody's on the same page with PowerPoint. We all use it slightly differently, but there are still those functionality elements that we wish for. It's a PowerPoint wish list. So anyways, what a great conversation, guys. This has been great to have so many people a part of the podcast and the conversations.
Thanks to everyone who contributed. It was wonderful. It was a very fun project to work with.
It was. Thank you all.
This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a professional presentation design agency. Check us out at tlccreative.com. If you have a virtual or hybrid event that needs a place for your attendees to experience that event, check us out at vxbmeeting.com. And the PowerPoint blog is my long-running blog with all kinds of things about presentation design, tips, tricks, downloads, and all that fun stuff.
This is Nolan, and check out nolanhaimscreative.com to learn more about our presentation and DataViz training. And there's also a lot of free downloads and stuff on our goodies page. And if you want to design slides without bullet points, you got to check out the betterdeckdeck.com, where you can get the actual deck of cards, PDF versions, PowerPoint source files, and use the code PODCAST to get a discount on an order of any version.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz. You can visit my website and blog at presentationwiz.biz. I'm also on LinkedIn as Sandra Johnson, PowerPoint MVP, and on Twitter as @PPTWiz. And don't forget to check out the Presentation Guild at presentationguild.org.
That is the conclusion to part two of the PowerPoint wishlist conversation. Episode show notes are available at the Presentation Podcast website, thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc., and new episodes are released on the first and third Tuesday of each month.